something with it, you're losing nutrient content. And primarily that's water-soluble vitamins.
So the clock is literally ticking.
That's right. So when you think about broccoli, when you cut a head of broccoli and you bring it in from outside and cook it, you have a much higher nutrient content, because if you got that broccoli from California and it shipped all the way to Michigan, you've lost about two-thirds of the vitamin C is gone.
And you notice that it tastes better.
Yeah, it depends on a number of issues. I mean, taste is affected by a lot of different environmental factors, too. But
well, I just was wondering.
Taste does make a difference.
Does taste and nutrition have any correlation?
Most likely it does.
Most likely. Very good.
We would be getting into some more scientific explanations for that.
Very good. Well, folks, time is speeding quickly. Our second segment is over, but there is a third segment. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with Gary Heilig, the Garden Guy, here on Strong Tower Radio.
Hello, friends. This is Doug Batchelor with Amazing Facts, and thank you for listening to Bible Answers Live on Strong Tower Radio. To find out our broadcast times, simply go to strongtowerradio.org.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to Strong Tower Radio's Good Growing with the Garden Guy. I'm your host, Tom Majeure, with my sister, Sue Majeure. Sue,
hello.
You have a question for Gary about peaches.
Yes, I was intrigued by his topic. I grew peaches in a bag. What happened? That sounds very intriguing.
Do you need a tree?
Yes,
you do. Okay,
okay. Okay, what I mean by growing peaches in a bag, there are these little bags that you can buy, and they have them available on Amazon. And the Japanese use this quite a bit, where they will put peaches, individual peaches, in a little bag. And they do this fairly early in the development of the peach, which eliminates a lot of diseases and insect damage, simply because the spores cannot land on the fruit and the insects can't physically get to the fruit. So you can eliminate a lot of spraying and a lot of damage by putting them in these little fruit bags. Now, the downside is it does take work, because you're putting all this fruit inside bags, and it's not practical for somebody like me to do all of my fruit, because I have like 70 trees.
Ooh.
Now, the other downside is you do have to protect your fruit from critters, because I went out to see how my peaches were doing, and all I found were bags.
Hmm. Oh. Something got, the bags still.
Not something, Tom. Raccoons.
Ooh.
And I was not happy. So next year, they're going to be bags and a fence around that tree.
Uh-huh.
Top, bottom, and sides. Yeah, they ate all of them.
Oh, my.
I was not happy. But it does protect your plants from certain pests and diseases, but not the four-legged type. And raccoons are extremely intelligent. So they took the bags down, and they were tied onto the branches and got in the bags and ate the fruit, and I have no peaches.
No, no. Well, tell me about...
Are these little bags that you put on there, are they, like, clear?
They're kind of whitish, and it's a very fine mesh fabric, and at the end of them, they have like a twist tie that you can twist around the branch. But evidently, raccoons know how to untangle twist ties.
Oh, but for a person that has, say, just like some dwarf peaches, like, you know, three or four trees or something, they could probably manage the peaches in a bag if they can keep the raccoons away.
Yeah, and what I will do next year, I'm going to put, a complete fence around all sides and the top so that they physically cannot get to the tree. We have a lot of raccoons in our area because we have a grower just down the road who grows sweet corn.
Oh.
And he has to have hunters in there. They have so many raccoons in our area, which is kind of interesting. They were very rare when people first came to Michigan.
Let me ask a question about these bags. Are they just a standard plastic bag, like a grocery bag or something, or are they...
It's more like a fabric bag. If you were to put fruit in a plastic bag, it's ideal for development of disease. So if there's anything already on it, I guarantee you they'll rot in there. It'll also get too warm, because the fabric bags does allow gas exchange, which you need to have.
So it's, you say a fabric, it's like a very fine mesh? Or
it's almost like a cheesecloth type
of thing. Cheesecloth, okay. Mm-hmm. Breathable.
Are they only used for peaches, or do people use them on other things?
You could use them on any fruit like apricots, pears, apples. You just have to have a large enough bag for the fruit that you're trying to grow.
Oh. I can see Tom thinking about tomatoes.
There you go.
You could do that with tomatoes. I don't see why not.
Oh.
Maybe I'll try it next year.
That will look even more interesting. We have to, Tom and I must do some more research, because those ground cherry seeds didn't really germinate. He tried several times. So obviously they require something that we don't know what it is that they
And these were
need.
From a seed company?
Correct.
Yeah, I ordered them from a seed company and had them shipped to Tom's house, and there was 100 seeds in there. I think there was maybe 4 weak, spindly little things that came up and died out of all of those.
Well, you can always send me a packet next year, and I'll see if I can grow them for you.
That would be interesting. I might take you up on that.
Very good. Let me ask this question. Let's we talk. If you beat the raccoons, Gary, and you have a harvest, what is coming this month?
Well, late peaches like Georgia Belle would be ready, and we have apples that are coming in right now. The earliest apples like McIntosh will be in by September. Usually your things like Empire or Golden Delicious, those are later apples, late September going into October. You have pears that will be ready in August, and some varieties move into September also.
You know, here's a question about pears. I'm curious now, Gary. I have tried, or rather discovered, those tiny little seckle pears.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very fond of those. When those are perfectly ripe, they have a faint rose perfume, and they're just delicious to tuck in your lunch. Are those a late harvesting or early harvesting pear?
I believe they're around September also. Send me an email. I have a list of pears and when they're ready to ripen, so I could tell you that if you send me a little note. But I think they're September.
Now, Gary, we come to the end of the season here, and there's success and failure. We revel in the success, but you'll do better next year. What can my friends who were disappointed this year, what can they do about their fruit harvest?
Well, usually when people are disappointed, they have some kind of problem. It might be a disease or an insect problem that they weren't expecting, especially if they're fairly new orchardists, because a lot of people think that all you do is plant the trees and go back and harvest. And so the first thing I would do is select a number of fruit, maybe 5 or 6 of them that have the different problems that you have. And you can do one of two things. You can either take it to your local extension office, and if they don't have people that have a specialty in fruit production, then they'll send it to somebody that does. Or you can take really close and clear pictures and email them to me, and I will tell you for free.
All right. Now, Gary, they'll need to have your address to send them to you.
Yeah, my email is heilig@msu.edu. But those pictures have to be close and clear. And I usually suggest people show me what's on the outside, then cut the fruit open and show me what's in the inside. And it's fairly easy to tell if you give me good pictures.
Now, Gary, I'd like you to repeat that address one more time, because I don't think they had their writing utensil available when you gave your address.
Okay, it's my last name, heilig, at MSU, Michigan State University, .edu, which is education.
Gary, we like to always have something for the ornamental and the lawnist. I don't know if that's a word, but
lawn enthusiasts.
So we like to have something for them. Let's see what bulb planting looks like for September.
Well, September is the ideal time to put your bulbs in. Now, you should have been getting catalogs in July and August, and you get some pretty good deals. if you order during those times. By the time September rolls around, you lost all of those deals. But in terms of tips for success, one of the important things you need to do is be sure you get the bulbs in as soon as you get them, because if you store them, they're going to die over the winter. Second thing is make sure you're planting them at the proper depth that they need to be at. They're going to need to be fertilized in the fall because the bulbs start growing underground before they send up a top. And if you've had problems with things like field mice getting into your bulbs and eating them, the moles don't bother them, but field mice will. And moles might dig around them, but the field mice use the holes. What I would do is treat them with a fungicide called Thyram. Thyram is spelled T-H-I-R-M, and it's a fungicide that has a very bitter taste. If you happen to find anything that has the bitter taste of walnuts, that would also work, but Thyram will keep the creatures off, at least for the year that you plant them. And, of course, a soil test would be ideal before you plant them, but if you can't, just use a balanced fertilizer. And usually when you get your bulbs, they will give you some planting directions and telling you how much fertilizer you need to put down.
So
I have seen cages in the ground, you know, depending on the size of the bulb, whether they use like a small chicken wire or like a hardware cloth or, you know, little tiny bulbs. And they would put the bulbs in the cage, kind of form a cage out of that,
mm-hmm.
put the bulbs in there and shut the cage and then put the dirt and everything on top of it to keep out mice and squirrels. Does that work?
That can work very well, but I wouldn't use hardware cloth. I would use chicken wire because the chicken wire has a little larger hole. Unless you can get hardware cloth, because some hardware cloth will be as small as like a quarter inch holes square, and not very much can grow up through there except maybe crocus. So you want a larger cage hole so that the bulbs can grow up through them. But yeah, it works very well.
Is there anything that discourages the rabbits from gnawing the tulips to the ground as quickly as they come up? I've had problems with that in the past when they just kept going nibble, 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 nibble right down to the ground.
And what's nibbling?
They were coming up.
What's nibbling them?
Rabbits.
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 Well, you might try putting on something like Hinder, which will keep them from feeding. It's an ammonia-based repellent. The problem with Hinder is if you get a good rain, it's going to have to be reapplied. There are other repellents out there that you can put down that may help somewhat. But rabbits eat a fairly wide variety of things, and they're kind of tough to deal with. So one thing you can do is invite hunters over to your yard.
Well, I was just thinking, when we lived in Wisconsin for a while, I have never seen such a plague of rabbits in the city as they had there where we lived. And not even the neighborhood dogs could keep them in check. And they ate everything. They were so prevalent when our mother went out to Dad Love's big, like, beefsteak tomatoes and so on. My mom would plant a few every year for him. And one evening, they didn't have a hose to run out there. We were renting that house. So Mom walked out there with an old-fashioned watering can. And it was dusk, and she started watering the tomatoes, and she watered the rabbit that was trying to hide when she came out there. I guess he figured she wouldn't see him in the tangle of vines. So she's watering, and she watered the rabbit. Well, he exploded out of the tomatoes, and first I saw, looking out the window, was I heard a shriek, and I saw the watering can cartwheeling through the air, and Mom scurried back to the house.
Yeah, they don't have very much of a defense. They don't fight back or anything, so they can only hide or run. If you put up a fence around and it doesn't have to be a high fence either, it will discourage them. It may not stop them if they really want it, but if there are other things around for them to feed on, then they'll go there instead. But rabbits, just like any animal, they like three things: food, water, and shelter. And then, of course, the number of predators that go after them, because they're low on the food chain, will determine how successful they are in reproducing. And in a city, everybody plants stuff that they like to eat. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're pretty prolific reproducers, so that's why there's so many. I don't like to hurt stuff if I don't have to. I leave the rabbits alone.
Gary,
that's a good hint, though, about the low fence, keeping them out. After all, there was plenty of lush grass for them to eat.
Well, they don't really eat the grass as much as they will eat clover in the grass. They'll eat more of the broadleaf weeds and things like that than they will the actual grass. They love white clover, so put some white clover in your yard.
Speaking of grass, let's talk about putting in the new lawn. This 'tis the season for new lawns and overseeding.
Yeah, between mid-August through mid-September is the ideal time. You can seed further than that, but it's more risky depending on whether we have a warm fall or not. And the difference between starting a new lawn and overseeding is, say, for instance, you may have a decent lawn, but you may have some weeds. What I usually tell people is do some overseeding, which is a machine that will actually put grass seed in the ground, in the existing grass, and it will thicken it up. And then once that grass is up and going, then you can treat the broadleaf weeds as late as October without causing problem for your new grass. So now's the time to overseed too. And I've seen companies, and they did this at our church, our grass was really thin. They came in and overseeded it, and the next year it was just beautiful. So you can really improve a lawn that's not in very good shape by overseeding and then coming back in and knocking out the weeds.
What about fall weed control? What can we do now?
Well, September and October is the ideal time to deal with lawn weeds because the plants, especially perennial plants, are shipping a lot of the carbohydrates down to the root system. Like dandelion has this big taproot. And so if you are applying some weed control material, which most of them contain a combination of 2,4-D, MCPP, and dicamba, some others will have triclopyr in it for some of the more difficult things to control, like Creeping Charlie, which, by the way, shouldn't be sprayed until October. But each of these products will have a different combination of those materials. And if you spray it on during September on a nice sunny day, this material is shipped down to the roots, and it will do a much better job of killing those plants out. And then, of course, you can continue to fertilize. Usually the last fertilization is about Labor Day. But you want to do some fertilization with slow-release nitrogen so that you can get the grass to thicken up, because the reason you have weeds is because you have the space for weeds to grow.
What about, let's turn a corner, and before we end, let's talk about the white spruce trees. Some of them are looking sickly. What is going on?
A lot of times people used to call me at the office and they said, my spruce tree is losing its needles. It looks thin. It's not looking so good. And many times there are needle cast diseases like rhizospheria, for instance, and these affect the older needles. So what happens is the older needles toward the interior of the tree will fall, and then you just have a few of the newer needles that have grown that year or the year before. And so the tree looks very scraggly, if you will. And for younger trees, it's easier to treat because there are fungicides that can be used to get that under control. But I would also suggest if you have had this problem, you might want to treat and put the tree in a fertilization schedule so you can thicken it up a bit. All conifers or cone-bearing trees will drop their older needles. And if you can get better growth on the new ones, it will tend to cover up the interior portion of the tree where it doesn't have those other needles. But if they're always putting on very short growth and you're losing a lot every year to these needle cast diseases, you're going to have a pretty scraggly looking tree.
Let's close with last gardening thoughts here. What about, can I use my fireplace ash in my garden?
That depends. A lot of times people want to know, can I put that on as a source of nutrients? Fireplace ashes do have nutrients, specifically potassium, and there's some phosphorus, not very much nitrogen. But the problem you run into is it acts like a liming agent. So if you already have a fairly high pH, then you would not want to put wood ashes on. If your soil test report says you need to lime your soil, then you can use wood ashes because it's a liming material.
Then finally,
is it true you can use the wood fireplace ashes to discourage slugs and snails?
They don't particularly care to walk across it, so yes, it would be a little irritating to them.
And then the last question, a quick one here, Gary, is it too soon to test my soil?
No, it's not. You can beat the brush by doing it in the fall. As long as the soil is reasonably dry, it's a good time to go out and take the soil test and send it in, and you'll be ready to go next spring.
Well, it's been fun having you again, Gary. We just can't wait till October already. So you folks, you've been listening to Strong Tower Radio's Good Growing with the Garden Guy, Gary Heilig, with your hosts Tom and Sue Majeure. Come back next month. Bye now.